Hare Krishna.
Yeah, I want to speak on Gita, Bhagavad Gita. Chapter 4, text 34. Very well known verse. You can chant it with me. Tadvidhi pranipatena.
Tadvidhi pranipatena.
Pariprasnena sevaya. Upadekshyanti te jnanam.
Upadekshyanti te jnanam.
Jnaninastattva darshinaha. Tadvidhi pranipatena. Pariprasnena sevaya. Upadekshyanti te jnanam. Jnaninastattva darshinaha. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Purport. The path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. The Lord therefore advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of disciplic succession from the Lord himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following this principle of disciplic succession. The Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in the disciplic succession can convey the message of the Lord as it is to his disciple. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process, as is the fashion of the foolish pretenders. The Bhagavatam says, Dharmang tu sakshad bhagavat pranitam. The path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help lead one to the right path. Nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender, and one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master, and when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. Not only should one hear submissively from the spiritual master, but one must also get a clear understanding from him in submission and service and inquiries. A bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind toward the disciple. Therefore, when the student is submissive and is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshanaha. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. This verse is commonly cited to stress the importance of approaching a spiritual master. But there's another very important point in here, that why should we approach a spiritual master? And the point is to learn the truth by understanding the truth. Tattva, Srila Prabhupada here translates as truth. It's a technical term. So the point is to know the truth. That is why one approaches a spiritual master. And what is that truth? Well, Krishna describes in the next verse that yajgyatvana punarmoham evam yasasi pandava yena bhutanya sheshani drakshatyatmanyatomai. Having obtained real knowledge from a self-realized soul, you will never fall again into such illusion, for by this knowledge you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme, or in other words, that they are mine. So, to see the truth means to know Krishna. Knowledge is given of Krishna before vision of Him is given. Or, another way of saying it is that knowledge of Krishna is tantamount to seeing Krishna. The word is there, darshan, which literally means seeing, and it also means a way of seeing or a philosophy. So, the Guru teaches the disciples where to go, how to go, because the Guru has seen the truth and understands that Krishna is the Supreme Absolute Truth, and that the purpose of life, or the very meaning of existence, is in relationship with Krishna. For the jiva, that is in an attitude of a surrendered service, loving surrendered service. Now, one has to approach a guru very submissively. That means, that is described here, that one should bow down, that's the first thing said, fall down. Not fall down into maya, but physically fall down. Same term is used. Patan means to fall. And here, pranipat. If you say we fall into maya, and then we become patit, fallen. But there's another way to fall down by which one gets lifted up, and that is to physically bow down. To express that I am inferior to you, I'm seeking your mercy, just as water comes down, I'm taking a lower position so that your mercy may fall on me. And then to make questions, well, there are different ways of making questions, but here it's understood that question, by the context, it's understood that questions are made to understand. In other words, to present that I don't know, you please enlighten me. It's also possible to ask questions as a challenge. Or the question may be asked by someone who knows the answer to someone to test whether or not they know the answer, just like a teacher asks the students. But here, the questioning means in the manner of someone who wants to know. So, and they have to serve. So one has to take the position of being inferior. So it's very difficult for people who have the demoniac attitude. They feel Ishvaro ham aham bhogi. I am the controller of the world, and everything in the world is meant for my enjoyment. So it's very difficult for them to be a disciple. Even if superficially they become a disciple, they never actually become a disciple. So the whole point is to understand the truth. That one, first of all, if one is to understand the truth, one has to understand that I'm an illusion. I don't know what the truth is. So one has to approach one who has seen the truth. Now, there could be some problem there, because we who are inquiring from the one who has seen the truth, we haven't seen the truth. So how do we know who has seen the truth? If we ourselves don't see the truth, but we want to see the truth, we have to learn from someone who has seen the truth, but how do we know who has seen the truth? So we have to have some faith. That should be reasonable faith. If we see someone who wears leather jackets and rides on big motorbikes and drinks lots of beer, we probably, by the symptoms, we wouldn't think that this person is a qualified teacher of the truth, because he appears to be acting in a completely materialistic manner, specifically a rather gross kind of manner. So how are we to understand? Well, indications are given in Shastra about that. Of course, one can't study Shastra without the guide of a guru. So within the culture that is based around Shastra, Vedic culture, these ideas are in the air, so to speak. Well, it's not really the time for giving a garland, but anyway, Hare Krishna, especially not a wet one. Thank you. Thank you for the thought. Hare Krishna. So the ideas are in the air, even if you may not have studied Shastra, but people talk about it and it's generally understood. Just like, for instance, in the modern world, even if one hasn't had the misfortune to study biology in an official, formal way, still one is liable to have the misfortune of thinking that life has come into being from matter by an evolutionary process urged by or driven by natural selection. So this is what is taught in the biology classes, as far as I know. But even if you don't study formally in a biology class, the general idea is there, because if you read something in a newspaper, it will say something like, well, fossils discovered, and this is from the pre-Cambrian period, and or why some people are very intelligent, it's a freak of genetic natural selection, and so on and so on. It's an accepted concept within modern society. So if one is living in a Shastric or Vedic culture, these ideas are there, just like even today among modern Hindus, although there's among the average Hindu, there's absolutely no religious education whatsoever as to what it means to be a Hindu. But still there's some idea that, well, we had previous lives and we'll have a future life. There's no systematic education, but it's generally understood. Somehow or other. Some people will say, well, your grandmother might say, don't step on that ant, otherwise you'll get bad karma. You'll have to suffer in your next life. Maybe your grandmother will say that. If she's not putting on her shorts and jumping on a motorbike with her latest boyfriend. She's not become modernized. So, one should have a general idea of who has seen the truth. But there's a problem with that also, because the general idea in modern Hindu culture is someone with a long beard who holds a flower and who smiles and says something from the Upanishads. At least he says it's from the Upanishads. We don't know, because we don't know what the Upanishads are. We think, oh, he's self-realized. So there's a lot of cheating going on in the guru business. And it is very easy to cheat people, because in a culture where having a guru is quite common, it used to be not just common, it used to be compulsory. People thought, I have to get initiated, because it says in Shastra, if you don't get initiated, then you go to hell. And you're just like an animal. So people were anxious to get a guru by any means, and they weren't too anxious to learn the truth. So there's where the problems come. Why this verse that we just read says that one should approach a guru to learn the truth. But if you think, well, I just approach a guru, but you don't really know why, or one is not serious to understand the truth because one is interested in sense gratification, like almost every jiva in this material world, which is why we come to this world, then the purpose of accepting a guru won't be fulfilled. And in many cases we find people who are gurus who they don't even have any idea that they're supposed to teach the truth. They're supposed to be spiritual gurus. But they don't teach the truth. They just give blessings, or mostly they give blessings. So the point that one has to learn the truth is not conveyed. And so people don't learn the truth. And so, despite formally or officially having a guru, one remains in ignorance. Now, traditionally, within our Gauriya Sampradaya, as well as within many branches of the Vedic culture, or most of the Vedic culture, you could say, guru, the role of a guru was a hereditary task. Just as there are different castes, there's the Baba caste, the Potter caste, and the Weaver caste, and the fighter class, or the ruling class. So there's also the guru caste. Your father's a guru and you train up the sons, and if there are, say, three sons, then you divide the father's clientele among the three sons. Or you may just give it to the elder son. And the younger sons just have to settle for being pujaris in a temple or something like that. Now, that can be a good system. This system came, actually, for instance, Gopal Bhartha Goswami, one of the famous founders of the Gauriya Sampradaya. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the founder, but the six Goswamis, of whom Gopal Bhatta was one. The six Goswamis, they were specifically given the task by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu of carrying forward the Sampradaya. Six Goswamis, of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave that to all his followers, but specifically to the six Goswamis and to Nityananda Prabhu. They were specifically, Nityananda was sent to preach in Bengal, and six Goswamis to really establish the Sampradaya by writing books, reviving Vrindavan as a holy place, and teaching Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. So Gopal Bhatta, he established the temple of Radharaman in Vrindavan, and he was a lifelong brahmachari, so he gave the worship, as he was getting older, he made arrangements that householder disciples of his would continue the seva, this worship of the deities. And it's handed down in the family line. And those Saivites, or the servants of Radharaman, have acted as gurus traditionally. So there are many such families. And at least previously, within each generation, there would be teaching. The fathers would teach their disciples and their sons about all the intricacies of the teachings and practice of Krishna consciousness, according to the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and according to the particular branch of the sampradaya that they were in. There may be some differences, not fundamental differences, but some differences, just like in Bengal, mostly in Bengal, the Advaita Vansha, the descendants of Advaita Prabhu, and the Nityananda Vansha, those who claim descent from Nityananda, a different attitude. The Advaita Vansha would initially, they were quite picky about who they choosy or not so liberal. They would about who they would initiate. They would initiate caste people. Whereas the Nityananda Vamsa Goswamis, as they're called, they would initiate anyone and everyone. With the idea that Advaita Prabhu was a strict Brahmin and Nityananda was very liberal. And he gave, you know, Krishna prema to everyone. So the families, they may continue in Krishna consciousness, but there's also the danger of it becoming broken down. The culture becomes broken. That generally happens within all paramparas in course of time. Sakale neha mata yoga nashta paranta tapa. The very nature of time is, well, in course of time there is Grasishnu, Prabhavishnu, there is destruction, and then again swelling. But good things, they tend to decline in this material world by the nature of time. It's the destructive nature of time. So, there are statements in Shastra that one should accept a guru from a good family. With the understanding that if one is raised in a good family, then one will have good culture and behavior. But that's not the main requisite of a guru. The main requisite is that he knows the truth and acts according to the truth. So that even if one is not born in a good family, but acts in a manner that is suitable to teach others the science of the truth, then such a person is more qualified than someone who's born in a family, but he may even have the knowledge, but he may be very materialistic also. We do see people who have knowledge of Vaishnava Dharma, they know everything very well, but at the same time it's almost palpable how greedy they are, to put it bluntly. They're very interested in getting money and facilities from their disciples and from whomever else they can get the money from. And the money is used not only directly in Krishna's service, but for their family maintenance, marrying their daughters, and so on and so forth. So, can such people impart the truth to others? People who know the truth, they've learned all the points, but they're not really acting on that platform. They've learned it theoretically. Or in other words, can the truth be imparted by means of non-truth? If someone's really not qualified in the most important spiritual sense, but they know, like a professor in the university, they know the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, can they give us the truth? Well, in a superficial sense, but the attitude of the disciple, the attitude of the guru will be imparted to the disciple. So generally, someone who's actually interested in the truth, they're quite discerning. And we find that many disciples of Srila Prabhupada, before coming to the shelter of Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet, they went to different gurus, or they tried different paths, but they felt unsatisfied. And then they felt satisfied when they came to Srila Prabhupada, who came to propagate the truth of Krishna consciousness. But Srila Prabhupada, he also approved of means of preaching the truth by means that were not fully on the platform of truth, at least according to the mundane perspective. Of course, in the material world, everything is false, everything is meaningless. But for instance, Srila Prabhupada approved that devotees sell Srila Prabhupada's books, while the devotees were dressed in civil dress. I mean, shirt and pants and maybe a wig. to cover the nice shining head, or maybe they would grow their hair a little bit and disguise the fact that they were members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, the Krishna cult, as people thought of it. So it means some adoption of untruth. In other words, one is not one is deliberately deceiving others. It's not a major deception. But the idea is that if people see someone dressed as a monk, they may be less inclined to take a book because they think it's something strange to take a book from some monk. Most people are not very interested in religious matters and they don't want it pushed on them. But if, for instance, one shows the Bhagavad Gita and points out some verses which talks about gaining peace, then people, they might be interested in that. One, by selling the books, one doesn't generally say that, well, this book teaches you that you have to give up meat-eating, gambling, intoxication, illicit sex, and surrender to Krishna. But we say something about the book which people, or even vaguely related to the book, which people might be more interested in. For instance, we say this is about yoga, the yoga of love. So that's true, but it's very vague. When people think of love, they generally have some romanticized notion of love in this material world. So it's a kind of deception. So the truth of Bhagavad Gita is being taught by adding some minor element of untruth. It doesn't mean that the truth becomes compromised, but it means the method of delivery includes some measure of untruth. Although actually, if we consider from the absolute platform, that measure of untruth is absolutely insignificant. It doesn't compromise the philosophy of Krishna consciousness in the slightest, although it can be misunderstood. And actually what happened in America especially, many people became very dissatisfied with our devotees distributing books because they took the license of presenting themselves in a deceitful way to become deceitful in a manner that became most displeasing to many people. For instance, well, there was a common thing called the change-up, in which someone would agree to buy a book and then they'd open their wallet and they'd have in their wallet $100 bills, $50 bills, $20 bills, $10 bills, $5 bills, $1 bills. And the devotee would say, could you give me a $100 bill and then I'll give you change? Because I have a lot of small change. You say, okay, sure. So they give $100 and then the devotee would give 10, 10, slowly, and stop at 50 and say, would that be okay? And the person's kind of shocked. He said, okay, I'll give you one more. And then the person was only intending to give $10, and by some kind of trick, he gives $40. And then the devotee gave him another book and thought, great, I gave him two books instead of one, and liberated more Lakshmi from those karmis who were going to use it for meat-eating, gambling, intoxication, illicit sex. So I did and we used it for Krishna's service. We really benefited them, which is a fact if the money was actually used for Krishna's service. But the people walked away thinking, what happened? I just got cheated. And so the devotees became very unpopular. They wouldn't have become unpopular if they'd only adopted wearing regular civil dress, but they became unpopular because they adopted means of untruth which were very annoying to people. They got the book, but Many times they throw away the book. They thought, I don't want that book. Person gave me the, they did that to me. What, they want to teach me something? I don't want to learn that. So that was an instance which actually set our movement back in many ways in America, because of adopting means, some means of untruth. Now here we're on the subject of learn the truth from a guru. Now, guru means tattva-darshi, one who has seen the tattva. Now, this statement can be analyzed in various ways. Tattva-darshi would generally be understood as one who has understood the teachings and the philosophy, the siddhanta of Krishna consciousness. Who understands that very clearly. Sometimes it's interpreted to mean that one who's actually seeing Krishna face to face. But this statement is here, tattva-darshi, one who understands, one who's seen the philosophy or understands it very clearly. But as we ourselves don't know who's who or what's what, we have to accept that to a large extent as a matter of faith. And to impart faith in others, gurus or their followers, they may advertise their guru. They may say, well, our guru is the, he's in a great chain of devotees coming directly from Lord Chaitanya. He's it's around the 13th generation going on in some vanshas. 13th generation from Advaita Acharya, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciples, when they were collecting funds, they would sometimes say that our guru lives in the forest and only eats tulsi leaves, which wasn't true. But people thought, oh, great sadhu. So they promoted some untruth. Of course, that could be problematic if people come to see the guru and sees that he doesn't live in the forest and he doesn't eat only tulsi leaves. So that could be problematic. But that tendency may be there to advertise and say that, or even say, just like for instance, Srila Prabhupada, about one of his disciples, he said he is the dearest grandson of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And the disciples of that disciple were very fond of repeating that, that he's the dearest grandson of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Prabhupada gave that statement about that devotee, about that disciple of his. So unfortunately, after some time, that devotee, who Srila Prabhupada said is the dearest grandson disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, started acting in a way very different to that which one would expect of the dearest grandson of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, or even of any follower of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So what happened? Did Srila Prabhupada say something untrue? Had it been promoted all these years as an untruth, just to boost him? How do we understand this? Well, we could understand it like this, that if it had stayed in his position and continued to act as the dearest grandson of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, then that could be acceptable. But just like every jiva is dear to Krishna, every jiva has an intimate relationship with Krishna. But if we come out of that relationship, then that relationship becomes eclipsed. If we decide to come out of that. So similarly, Srila Prabhupada made various flattering statements about his disciples. And naturally, the disciples of those disciples, they like to repeat such statements because it helps to bolster their faith in their guru. But it has to be seen if the guru is actually on that platform. Just like if we see the Advaita Vamsa, one is 13th in line, directly born from Advaita Acharya. But if, for instance, he's smoking cigarettes, then even if he is 13th in line from Advaita Acharya, then we can understand that he's not really in the mood of Advaita Acharya. He's not a very good representative of Advaita Acharya. So in the same way, devotees may be advertised in various ways. Oh, he's a devotee for 45 years, well, maybe true, but then we have to see if he's actually acting on the devotional platform. So really, it is the responsibility of the disciple to search for the truth. And to find the representative who will present the truth and live the truth. And one should not go by hearsay alone. Someone says, this devotee is so great because of this, 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 and this, but it's really the duty of the disciple to see for himself and ascertain for himself. And it's very difficult because, especially in the beginning stages, one doesn't really have an idea of even what one should be looking for. So one should pray to Krishna for help, to please send me the guidance that I need so that I can see the truth. Now, what is actually the truth about the devotee and about their character? Well, ultimately that's from Krishna's vantage point. Maybe difficult to ascertain. Among the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, there was much friction. But there may be disciple A and disciple B, and they're really, I mean, some of them were really against each other. There was a lot of very serious friction. But according to the followers of disciple A, he's a completely pure devotee, and the disciple B and all their followers, they're bogus, and vice versa. So how to understand in such a case? Well, ultimately that's to be understood again from Krishna's vantage point. But Krishna's vantage point, we understand in this world via Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. And then again you come to the gift of it. But what about, we try to understand who the Guru is, and we have to understand through the Guru. So it seems to be a roundabout process, a self-defeating process. But ultimately then we have to take shelter of Krishna to understand the truth. And if we don't want really to understand the truth, then we'll be satisfied with the guru or with a guru's teachings which don't give us the truth. And there's an example of that in the Upanishads, that the demon Virochana, who is the son of Prahlad Maharaj, demon, like his grandfather, he approached Brahma. And Indra also approached Brahma. So the head of the demons and the head of the demigods, they approached at the same time for the same purpose. They want to know Atma Gyan, knowledge of Atma. So they both came at the same time, and Brahma said, okay, I'll tell you. The Atma is the body. So, according to dictionary definitions, that's quite acceptable. The body, that is one of the definitions of Atma. Sometimes, not often, sometimes among Hindi-speaking people, in some religious gathering or religious circle, they'll refer to people as Atma. Itin Atma Yaha Ayahe, something like that. Of course, they may have some impersonalistic overtones there also. So the body understood as the person. That's the understanding, which is not incorrect. It's also linguistically admissible. So they both got this information, they both went off. And Virochan thought, okay, the body is the self. That's what I always thought. And Indra, after some time, came back and said, is that all you've got to say about it? I mean, is there anything more? And Brahma said, yes, there's more to say. But anyway, now Virochan's gone, and I'll teach you more about them, what is Atma. So Virochan was satisfied with an incomplete explanation because it suited his own purposes. He was not eager to know the actual truth. So he learned from the Guru and he conducted his life on that basis. But he didn't understand the ultimate truth. I mean, in one sense you can say it is the truth, the body is the self, but it's not the truth that Krishna comes to speak in Bhagavad Gita. So one may be satisfied with a lesser or incomplete understanding if one is not eager to know the truth. And one will try, to, one who's not actually very eager to learn the truth, means they're still interested in sense gratification. So they may wish to mix sense gratification with the process of self-realization, which is impossible because they're different paths altogether. So then this is what happens in the how in the 13th generation or 14th generation or 15th generation, sakale neha mahata yoga nashta parantapa, how the parampara becomes spoiled in course of time, because in course of time someone thinks that, well, there's vairagya vidya, so the really important thing is the vidya part, why bother about the vairagya? We'll just have all this knowledge and then there's no need to be so renounced and we'll have a little bit of sense gratification. We don't have to be very strict and follow all the rules. But what happens if one admits the possibility of sense gratification? Then one's desire to know the truth will immediately be compromised. And one's ability to understand the truth will be compromised. Because one starts to see the truth in terms of one's own sense gratification. And from then on, it's a slippery slide down into complete degradation, complete maya, complete uninterest in the truth. So, tattva-darshi, one symptom of a tattva-darshi is that they should be knowledgeable of the truth, they should act on the platform of the truth. Not interested, they should be not interested in sense gratification, either gross or subtle. Oh, that question. Can the truth be propagated by untruth? Maybe, to some extent, but just like, for instance, advertising. Someone advertises, our guru is the best because Prabhupada said so. Prabhupada might not have exactly said that, or he might have said something like that. But then one, the whole basis of understanding why one should accept a guru is compromised. And the fact that one should accept a guru to understand the truth, that becomes compromised. So it may be good for getting people to come and become disciples, but it might not be very good for getting them to be very serious disciples. Because it's on a flimsy platform. It's not on the platform of how we should understand the truth. So some untruth might be, or partial truth, or not very well presented or understood truth can be presented. Our guru is the best because da 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 da, fill up the dotted line. Every guru has their own line that why our guru is the best. But actually those who are interested in the truth, they're not interested in promoting themselves as the best or having even their disciples promote them as the best. They're interested in promoting Krishna as the best and ourselves as our humble servants who teach the understanding by which we may come to Krishna. But if we reduce it to some formula, this one is 13th in line directly from Advaita Acharya, Prabhupada said he's the best. If we accept it like that without ourselves taking the trouble to study what are the characteristics of that devotee, then from the very outset we are approaching with a laghu concept. Laghu means light, guru means heavy. So, we shouldn't cheapen this guru concept. Guru means very heavy. We see our parampara, very heavy. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisthan Saraswati, Gorky Shardas Babaji, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Sometimes people have this imagination that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was some kind of light figure. But none of us could live with Bhaktivinoda. I doubt it. He was very strict. The imparting of the truth is possible via the truth. And there might be some slight bending of the truth just to bring people in. But if at all we are going to go to the truth, to the true position of surrendered service to Krishna, we have to understand clearly where we are going, why we are going, how we are going, and if we are going at all. That has to be understood very clearly. It's an exacting path. Kshurasya dhara nishita duratyaya durgang patas tatkaveyo vadanti. It's like a razor's edge. It's very sharp. You have to be very careful. It's a difficult path according to the learned. So, we should respect our gurus, our acharyas, by acharyopasanam, worshipping the Guru. Worship the Guru is not so much in terms of offering flower garlands, as is especially here in Chennai, seems to be a tradition for sannyasis, people offer flower garlands, which is very nice. I'm not saying it's very nice to do that. But that in and of itself does not constitute acharyopasana. The real acharyopasana is to follow and to teach in the same way as the previous acharyas have done, to preserve the sampradaya by teaching the same thing in the same way. There may be some slight difference in presentation, but the actual facts that we have to surrender to Krishna, that must be preached. There's no way around it. We may think that, well, I'd like to go back to Godhead, but I do like the pizzas that they cook in that restaurant round the corner. So I'm not going back to Godhead unless they have a branch in Vaikuntha. Or maybe I can ask the Kalpa Vriksha trees to send me some pizzas up. But it doesn't work. We have to surrender our desires to Krishna's desires. Thinking what I like doesn't work. This has to be taught. We have to think what Krishna likes. Krishnarthe kila cheshta. All endeavors for Krishna's satisfaction. So this is the truth which seems very harsh to people who are not sincere to surrender to Krishna, but which is enlivening to people who do want to surrender to Krishna. That, that's the platform I want to be on. Everything for Krishna. Not just to hear stories of previous devotees and hear their stories and then say Hari Bol and then go to the Pizza Hut. But that doesn't work. We have to come to that standard ourselves of everything for Krishna. So, again, we may not say this truth immediately to everyone. We may not tell everyone. In the very beginning, we may say in the beginning, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. But if someone's to be initiated, then they have to understand that we're not being initiated into, it's not just chanting 16 rounds, four regulated principles, and then apart from that, do whatever you like. It's not that at all. The four regs and four regulated principles and 16 rounds, that is the minimum. But on top of that, we have to surrender ourselves to Krishna. That's actually the definition of diksha given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Dikka kale bhakta kare atta samarpan. One, the initiation, the time of initiation, one surrenders oneself fully to Krishna. So, one approaches a guru to understand this truth and to be trained in this truth. And anything beyond that is not truth. So, in the initial stages, or to bring people in, we may say things which are not exactly the truth. We may say, well, to people, this is a book about yoga, about Bhagavad Gita. It's true, but we know that their understanding of yoga is not what we are saying. They think, oh, it's a book that will make them physically healthy. That may be done often in the West. But so it's a kind of deception. But we cannot maintain this in the path of teaching spiritual knowledge. We have to give the truth as it is. And it's not by formulae or gimmicks or advertisement that one can become spiritually advanced. One actually has to surrender to Krishna. This is taught by those who have seen the truth. They teach the path of surrender to Krishna, which means doing everything for Krishna's sense gratification, giving up one's own personal sense gratification. Atendriya priti vancha tare bale kam, Krishnendriya priti icha dhare premana. So the path of satisfying one's own senses is called the path of material desire, and the path of love for Krishna, prema, that means that only the desire to satisfy Krishna, nothing else. So ultimately one has to come to that level. Now, in liberally distributing Krishna consciousness, as Srila Prabhupada did, he might initiate people very liberally at some stage, especially in the early days of the movement. Srila Prabhupada was very liberal in initiation. As long as people agreed to chant 16 rounds and follow four regulated principles, Srila Prabhupada would initiate them. But later he became more strict, and he was teaching daily in his classes and in his conversations and in his books what actually Krishna consciousness means. So Srila Prabhupada, we worship Srila Prabhupada because he didn't present anything but the truth of Shastra. He showed what it means to be a guru by teaching and practicing that. So can the truth be propagated by untruth? No. Although in the initial stages, it is admissible under certain circumstances to indulge in some kind of worldly untruth. For instance, I have to go to a certain country next month, to which if I went dressed in the kind of clothes that I'm presently wearing, there's a high chance that I wouldn't be allowed in the country. So I dress in pants and shirt with a cap, and then I go inside the country and I preach Krishna consciousness on Srila Prabhupada's order. So that's some kind of deception. That means the truth is being preached by some untruth. But the actual teachings of Krishna consciousness, we cannot establish them by teaching something else, by introducing untruth. Oh, an example just came to my mind in why I find it very dangerous that our movement, or certain prominent members of our movement, make public statements that ISKCON is very interested to feed school children nourishing food so that they can have a better future. This is not the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. By saying that, we state that we are in solidarity with people on the mundane platform. And it becomes an obstacle in preaching the truth. Preaching the truth that, for instance, that mundane education, especially as conducted today, is like a slaughterhouse for the soul. And the whole idea of developing the nation by having an educated populace, this is complete nonsense. But we can't preach that if we think, well, we'll make people like us And then when they like us, we'll preach the truth. But they like us because we're preaching the untruth, which appeals to their perverse sense of morality. So they may like us, but it actually becomes more difficult to preach the truth, because once you speak the non-truth, and then if you come along and say, well, actually feeding people so that they can get a better education, that's all nonsense, because real education means to understand Krishna. And actually Srila Prabhupada was against this modern education, and he even said that most people don't even need education. So we may think that we are preaching the truth by preaching some untruth, and we'll say that, well, you know, that's just for the outside people. But if the gurus say this, then their followers, what are they supposed to think? Say, our guru is speaking untruth. No, it must be truth. How could I say that my guru is speaking untruth? It must be truth. And then, but it's not the same as Prabhupada taught, and then it becomes all confusing. And then we interpret what Prabhupada said. Well, Prabhupada didn't do this because he didn't have the manpower, that I've heard recently. Although Srila Prabhupada never said that he didn't feed school children because he didn't have the manpower. So in this way we twist the truth. Means we're not devoted to the truth. So can we preach the truth by untruth? What happens is, although we say we're in a bona fide parampara, we're actually preaching untruth. And there may be elements of some truth in that. We may have people chanting Hare Krishna, but it's all mixed up with a wrong understanding. So we should be devoted to the truth, not to untruth. By untruth, we cannot preach the truth. That is the ultimate understanding. Also, although some minor elements of non-harmful deception or non-full delineation of the absolute truth in the beginning might be there. But we cannot teach some wrong understanding. Then we become enemies of the truth. We become atheists, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur famously said. If I cease to preach the absolute truth, then I become an atheist. I become against the Vedas. I become an enemy of the truth. So we have to be very clear about this. Otherwise, sakale neha mahata yoga nashta parantapa. The parampara becomes spoiled or destroyed. Hare Krishna, any question about this? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada, speaking on this verse, quoted the famous Gita verse, Manushanang Sahasreshu, and said it's very rare to find someone who's interested in finding the truth. Someone who knows the truth is very rare, even rarer. Krishna can be understood by the process of devotion. The devotee is a tattvadarshi. The symptom of a tattvadarshi is that he knows the truth and he imparts the truth. We don't find, you're giving the example of Gaur Kishore and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, that we don't find much imparting of knowledge. That's what you think. He didn't systematically teach the Shastra to him. But by his very being, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained, by his very person, Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji made it clear to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati what all the teachings of the Shastra are. And specifically, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that I did not think it was possible to actually be like that, to be a pure devotee with no interest other than Krishna. He didn't think it was possible to live in this world and be like that, but he understood that from seeing the person of Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. So there was teaching there. Well, one thing we should understand is that the relationship, the guru-disciple relationship between Mahabhagavats is not going to be exactly the same as that between a Mahabhagavat as the guru and a neophyte disciple. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, according to his own version, of course we understand this is his humility also, he had a very good theoretical understanding, but he became inspired by seeing Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj's actual practicing like that. Yeah. In ISKCON nowadays, they say, who do you mean by they? They means who? I'm not allowing you to finish the sentence because I got lost. They say? What do you mean by they say? Those who speak strongly and just speak strongly and don't do anything. Is there anyone like that who just speaks strongly and doesn't do anything else? They just speak strongly and then they sit down and eat and pass stool. Are there any such people? They're not doing anything. Whereas those who are feeding poor people, they bring many people. Well, if numbers only is your criterion, then you're in the wrong movement. You should go and join Amma. She has many more followers. Or you can go to Shirdi. They have many more people going there than to our ISKCON temples. At least here in Bhagavad Gita, we see that emphasis is given on understanding the truth, not simply on bringing many people. Srila Prabhupada brought many people by speaking the truth. People that came to him wanted the truth. Yeah. Kind of seems to be like a... Just leave out all those things. You can leave out kind of, like a... Just speak what you have to speak without adding all these unnecessary terms. The mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is to preach Krishna consciousness to everybody. But not many people are interested. Because Manushanang Sahasreshu, very few people are interested. Then?
So we are
If many people are not interested, then how do we make them interested? Well, we can follow the path of the Acharyas by public chanting of the holy name, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did. Various preaching means like having festivals, distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. These are the methods by which Srila Prabhupada... And mass prasad distribution. That's also very important. But mass prasad distribution doesn't mean that we say we're feeding the poor children. There's a difference. It's a completely different approach. If we mass prasad distribution to everyone is very just like, for instance, we can go out and Srila Prabhupada said along with prasad and distribution there should be kirtan and teaching of the philosophy. So we can do that. We can go in some area in the city and have kirtan and distribute prasadam and distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. That's a very... And then many people will like to take it because it's prasadam, at least here in India. They'll like to take it. But that's a very different proposition to telling people that we're feeding the poor children so they can get a better future and not saying that it's prasadam. It's a completely different approach. With no kirtan and no teaching. Then the emphasis becomes not on Krishna at all, but on... I just said that at the end. I didn't really want to get into a whole big discussion about this. So I'll finish it there, that discussion. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Bhagavad Gita as it is ki jai.